Good morning. It is time to get up with Michael Jeffrey Jordan. The first look at Last Dance was last night, and we've got all the reaction. Then, Tua tests badly, or does he? Why, what people are saying about Tua's Wonderlic may matter more than the score itself. And then, Joe Burrow. He's not even in the NFL yet, but he's already made one great decision as a pro. You'll hear what that was and what it means as we get up with you. Starting right now. On a Monday from Bristol, Mike Greenberg here, and delighted that you are there and have chosen to get up with us here on ESPN on a Monday morning after a Sunday night that so many of us have been waiting for eagerly for a long time, and that on some level Michael Jordan has been waiting decades for. What a night it was. The highly anticipated documentary The Last Dance premiered last night. It's ESPN's 10-part series chronicling Michael Jordan and surrounding primarily the final year of his sixth championship run, the 97-98 Chicago Bulls. But if you watched last night, the first two episodes, you are aware that they focused on so many other things. And while everything does center ultimately around that last year, that last championship, that last dance, there is everything you could ever possibly want to know about Michael Jordan and much, much more. Now, we have Jay Williams. I'll just be completely honest with you. Jay Williams is standing by, ready to go. We're having technical issues getting to him, so he will be live with us in 1 second. But let me bring Marcus and Dan into the program here to begin, because I awoke this morning to a text exchange between these two guys that somehow I wound up on that went on forever. And I just want to give you a taste of the conversation, because I think this is what's going on around America today. Dan, who's clearly poking the bear, texts, "Imagine watching this and thinking LeBron is better." To which Swagoo responds, "LOL, I knew it was coming. They'll make one about LeBron when we're older and someone will say the same thing." Dan was not backing down. Stop. Just freaking stop. And by Dan's standards, that's pretty strong language. And it would go on from there. Marcus would tweet, "My mind not changing, bro. And I'm telling you right now that this did not stop there. Dan, you're too smart for this." And Marcus would go on again. The two of them would go back and forth throughout this. At some point, I could like open up a scroll that would show the entirety of the thing. But Dan Orlovsky, you obviously saw the discussion that I had here with Marcus late last week. Why did you decide to poke the bear last night? What did you take away from this thing last night?
Well, the poking the bear was just too easy, Greeny. There's no way that anyone in their right mind sits there and watches that last night and thinks that that's not the best player to ever play. I mean, I had never owned a pair of Jordans before. And then 11:05 last night, I'm on the internet scrolling for Jordans. Like, how can I find my first pair of Jordans? I mean, there's so many like remarkable moments. And when guys like Bob Knight and James Worthy are calling, and Magic Johnson are calling Jordan the greatest ever, before he actually done anything. I love Marcus. He's one of my best friends. I cannot let a person who I think is that smart say something that stupid anymore. So I have to fight him on it.
Go ahead, Swagoo, and then I'm told Jay Will is ready. We'll keep you guys around. Go ahead, Marcus.
Gee, you know what my initial thought was? My initial thought watching that last night when Dan texted me was, I can see why everybody says Michael Jordan's the GOAT, because it's the first time that the NBA had seen that type of athleticism, that type of fire, and a skill set like that. I just don't think it's uncommon anymore. I think this is the first time the NBA has seen LeBron James as well in his makeup. So there will be stories told, like I responded to Dan last night, about LeBron in the same way. And our kids will say the same thing. How can somebody watch this and say LeBron James is not the best basketball player ever? I just happen to be way ahead of the curve. I got ultimate respect for Jordan. And by the way, I've owned a lot of Jordans before. I've owned 100 pair of Jordans. So I have respect. And it's not to put MJ in a negative light. You can't when it comes to basketball. I'm just partial. And my preference is to think that LeBron James is the GOAT.
You're out of your mind.
Basketball. I'm not backing down from that. I don't give a damn what nobody say.
You know what's interesting is that at some point in life, we all become our fathers, and this is that moment for me. What I'm trying to express to anyone listening to this conversation is that if you didn't see Michael Jordan play, I can't explain it to you any other way, except you can't do anything better than he played basketball. And this is in no way to take away from LeBron James. And look, the downside of these kinds of arguments, which took place on my Twitter page in my absence yesterday, when I just harmlessly tweeted, "I've seen the documentary, you're going to love it, and in my mind, it proves
Michael's the greatest player of all time. And 14,000 people started arguing about it almost immediately thereafter. My credentials as a LeBron fan are intact. He's on my Mount Rushmore. I consider him the fourth greatest player that ever lived, but Michael Jordan is number one. Guys, stay with me because I'm told we do have Jay Williams ready to go. And obviously, look, you all understand we're doing the best we can with the technology as best we can here. There he is, my man Jay Will, whom we've been waiting for all morning long. Jay was drafted by the Chicago Bulls 3 years after Michael departed. He had Michael Jordan's locker when he came in as the second pick in the NBA draft. So, Jay Will, what was your primary takeaway from watching the first two episodes last night?
I think there's just so many layers, Greeny, to this story that, you know, I've been able to pay attention to, but I didn't know the nuances of the story. And one of the personal, you know, relationships I have in the story is with Jerry Krause. You know, Jerry Krause and I were really, really good friends. And he used to talk to me about some of the mistakes that he had made in managing that relationship with Michael Jordan. Now, look, I'm never comparing myself to Michael Jordan, but I think the relationship that I have between Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause, I would hear these guys talk about, you know, how to build up a winning culture. And that came from communication. And there were just so many egos that were in that locker room. And I guess that was my takeaway last night, is that, you know, I knew a completely different Jerry Krause, and I also knew the softer side of Jerry. So was there a competitive side of him? Yes. But there's also Phil Jackson wanted to get paid the biggest money he did. You had this issues with Scottie Pippen and their battles. And it's just interesting to see how those nuances imploded, essentially, compared to when I came in there. You just felt those hallways were just forever haunted by the uncharted standard of excellence that no team could ever reach. And you felt that density in the atmosphere every time you stepped through them inside the United Center.
That's extremely well said. I knew Krause very well 25 years ago. And what I will say is, A, it is a travesty that he didn't get into the Hall of Fame while he was still alive. He was inducted posthumously. That is a disgrace to him, and it's a shame for his family, because he absolutely deserved it. Much of the negativity, however, that was aimed at him, he definitively brought on himself. And there just isn't any debating that. And it's interesting for me to hear you say, because this is not a conversation I had the chance to have with him, that he recognized that after the fact, because he did not strike me as someone who would have understood that. He was so standoffish. He was so stubborn that he felt like a guy who was going to stand his ground. So you're telling me that years later, he talked about having made mistakes in those relationships.
Yeah, great. He just talked about how he could have done things better, and that he had learned from his time being with Jordan and Pippen and Phil Jackson and managing not only their egos, but more importantly, his own ego. So, yeah, and those teams, man, back then, look, I had a deal with Corvette. I remember coming up and parking in the same spot Michael Jordan parked in, and just having that feeling of how special that team was. And look, I heard you guys originally talking about, you know, LeBron James and Michael Jordan. I will say this, like, to each their own. Michael Jordan lifted you, but it was almost like in battle. And if you weren't willing to pull yourself out of the trenches, Michael Jordan would take his foot, step it on your helmet, and reach his hand to the next person that wanted to fight their way out. So it was either get on my standard of excellence and start trying to achieve what I want to achieve, or if you don't, I don't got time for you. And that paid dividends. That's how they won six championships.
Let's work our way back towards that conversation again here with one of the best players in the league, one of the best players of all time, and that is Kevin Durant. Jay, I know that you talked to KD on the boardroom about MJ and the Last Dance documentary. We pulled out a little piece of that conversation that I think will be fascinating in the context of last night. Here's what KD said.
He can adapt his game to anything. He would fit in as the best player in the league. Like, that's what he would be. And, you know, I feel like he'll have more possessions to do more things, but there's also more athleticism in his game, and there's more length in his game, but, you know, it's also more space for MJ to go to work. So, I mean, we'll never know, but for sure, I mean, he's a master, you know, masterful basketball player. Like we've been saying, his skill level is unmatched. So, of course, he'll do numbers in this league today.
So let's talk about that conversation. KD saying Michael Jordan might even be better if he played in the league today. Jay Will, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, look, we started digging in stats in that segment with KD, and I recognized that the best shooting percentage Jordan had, I think, was 96-97 from the three-point line, which is 42.7% from the line. He took his second highest total of his career in three-point shot attempts at around 275. Just to give you perspective, the highest the highest he ever took was 280. The highest that Stephen Curry has ever taken was 886. Okay, so Jordan, career 32.3% shooter. I think he could have worked on that aspect of his game. And look, that was the only thing we literally itemized Greeny, all of his attributes and every attribute that Jordan had, from ball handling to mid-range jump shooting to competitive to IQ to vision. Everything was either a one or a zero, ranking like one being the best, zero obviously being above the best. The only thing that was subpar was his three-point shooting. But in today's game, if Jordan had acclimated to this style of play, yeah, he would have been probably the best player in the league. The only person I could see actually defending Jordan is Kawhi Leonard, when Kawhi Leonard is healthy and Kawhi Leonard is low managing, and Jordan never low managed. So yes, I do agree with Kevin Durant that Jordan would be probably the most prolific scorer in the history of the game, even if he were playing today, because the amount of possessions are unlimited.
He would be even more prolific, candidly. You just said the most important thing. Michael would have played all 82 games. You never know. Whoever was guarding him might have chosen that night to load manage. And the other piece of it that I will say here is that in episodes 3 and 4 will come next week. And episode 4 focuses on the bad boy Pistons. And what you will see, for those who do not know, is that every member of that team would have been suspended for the season for practically everything they did on every possession of those games. If Michael Jordan played in a game where it was refereed the way it is played today, Michael Jordan would have averaged 8 to 10 more points per game for his career. It is just that simple.
But Greeny, I do want to say one other thing, though, and I want to give Kevin Durant some love on this one, because I think it gets overlooked when you think about Michael Jordan. Like, Michael Jordan, his first couple years, I mean, he was putting on the show, dancing, dribbling the ball a lot, scoring points at will, at his own will. But he truly got unlocked in the triangle. And from somebody that has participated in that offense, it was particularly built for guys like Michael Jordan. And he saw Kobe Bryant really his game elevate from it, because they put him in a position where he minimized all of his risk. There was no wasted motion in Michael Jordan's game, and it was unlocked by Phil Jackson. So I just want to give Phil Jackson, Tex Winters, and the triangle some love there, because it just took Michael Jordan's game to a completely different stratosphere.
Yes, and Jerry too. Jerry was the one who first saw the genius in what Tex was doing and brought it there. Jay Will, thank you. We'll check back with you as we go. Again, Jay Williams came to Chicago just a few years later. We're just getting started. Look, there's a lot more to get to on the program today. We're not done talking about Michael by a long shot. We know him as a player. What made him such a great leader? We will talk about that. Stephen A., Jalen, and others are still to come. And, of course, to the NFL draft will go next. Word came out this weekend about Tua's Wonderlic scores. How important is that? How important is it that it came out at all? Answers next. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Adam Schefter, our NFL insider extraordinaire, is up with us this morning. Let's get up and go through some notes. Schefty, what does the NFL have in store for a mock draft tonight?
Greeny, what this is really is a rehearsal. Teams going through to see how they would do it. It's not like they're going to be turning in picks. It's not like they're going to guess how many picks they got right or wrong. They just want to make sure from a technical standpoint, they have all facets down. They'll be doing that about 1 o'clock today.
All right, look forward to seeing that. Meanwhile, Leonard Fournette lobbying the Jaguars to sign Cam Newton last week. Now, might he be on the way out of Jacksonville himself?
Look, the fact of the matter is I think Jacksonville was shopping Leonard Fournette before he made those comments on First Take. He's due $4.16 million. I don't know how thrilled teams are about paying Leonard Fournette that sum of money, but Jacksonville is open to dealing him. It's having discussions with teams, and it would not be a surprise in the next week if Fournette moves on.
Interesting. And then finally, how about some breaking news on the defending NFC champs?
Yeah, Greeny, the 49ers are fielding calls for picks 13 and 31. They would move both picks in the first round. Keep in mind, they don't have second, third, or fourth round picks. They want more picks. They're taking calls. They're open to dealing. They would trade both, and it sets up what should be a very busy week with the draft Thursday night.
No question. The wheeling and dealing is underway. And, of course, with 3 days until the NFL draft, Wonderlic scores starting to trickle out as we get closer. And with Tua Tagovailoa reportedly scoring a 19, which is a tick below the average of 20. And it was sort of a weird weekend for that as I bring Shefty into the conversation, because first they leaked out a much lower number, and then it comes out that 19 is the actual number. What can you tell us about this and the reaction to it?
And 19 is fine, Green. You look, there is football intelligence and there's book intelligence, and Tua clearly has the football intelligence that he needs. It's just one more factor that teams go through on their long list of items as they're analyzing each player. And it's no different with Tua and a Wonderlic. When you're as dissected as Tua is, you're going to look at every single little thing. But that 19 on the Wonderlic is not going to make or break him. It's just one more log thrown into the fire as teams brainstorm and try to figure out whether or not he's going to make it big at the next level.
I sort of thought the way this whole thing went this weekend was interesting, too, because first this much lower number comes out, and then it turns out people like you and Laura are correcting the story. That sort of reads to me like someone's trying to put some information out there that might try and knock him down draft boards. In your experience, is that the sort of thing that goes on this week?
Listen, I think there's a lot of things that are put out there. Teams can believe whatever they want. If they've done the work, they know what the situation is. And the first test apparently was from a couple of years back, wasn't trying, wasn't thinking. Who knows if it's right? Again, look at the film, look at the medicals, make your decision.
Yeah, the medicals obviously being the complicating factor here. Let me bring Dan and Marcus into the conversation here. Dan, I know that we were talking together, you and I, a little bit over the weekend about your thoughts on this. Where do you land on this morning about the significance of Tua and the Wonderlic test?
Well, this morning it's insignificant to me, but when the score came out, Greeny, I was shocked. I'll be honest with you, I was shocked because it didn't match his tape. Like, that low of a score didn't match his tape. And instantly I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me, because on tape he is such a quick thinker and such a good processor, and I expected the score to be higher. And then I have this exchange with Hall of Fame coach Tony Dungy, and he shares what Chuck Knoll taught him was, hey, when you go on the road recruiting to a player, you do not bring a tape measure, you do not bring a stopwatch. You trust your eyes and you trust your brain. And he told me the reality is, what is the player on tape? Who is the player on tape? Because that matters a lot more than how they're going to grade in some test. And it forced me to kind of reset my brain and how I was thinking about it and kind of just going back to the tape with Tua. And so I think the reality is that we've seen great quarterbacks, Hall of Famers, score poorly, and Terry Bradshaw and Dan Marino and Jim Kelly. And then we've seen first round quarterbacks really well on the test that weren't good, you know, or didn't pan out. Guys like Johnny Manziel or Blaine Gabbert. So for me, the test is as insignificant as it can be.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, it seems to me one of those many things people will put into the hopper as they make these decisions. Marcus, how about you?
I feel like it's insignificant too, G. The thing I thought about, though, just not to be totally out on the Wonderlic, which I am, but for the sake of us having this discussion, I wonder if it matters if guys are neck and neck when it comes to the football part of it. I wonder how much does a Wonderlic come into play. Like Shefty just said, another log in the fire. I just had that thought. Tua to me is as good in making football decisions on the field as I've seen since I've been covering college football. He had some bad plays his first year starting against Georgia and obviously LSU. But with that being said, man, when you look at the kid play football, when you look at Tua make decisions, diagnose defenses, run the offense to how they want him to run it, then you don't give a damn about a Wonderlic test. The thing, too, is it wouldn't be a lot of football players in the NFL and a lot of Hall of Famers if it was based on the Wonderlic test, G. I guarantee you that.
Jeffy, go ahead.
Well, Greeny, I just have a funny story to share. Back when the NFL Network hired me in 2004, shortly after I signed my contract, I got a call that they wanted me to meet with investigators. And I was like, did something go wrong? Like, what happened here? And I get very nervous. And they had me meet with these investigators. And when I sat down to meet with them, at the time, I had been running Wonderlic scores in the Denver Post for years. And they were so offended by that. They wanted to know who was giving me these scores and where I was getting them from. And the NFL has great sensitivity to these scores getting out, as evidenced by the fact that they had that meeting. They don't like these scores getting out. It's confidential. There are a lot of evaluators that think it's confidential. It's not relevant to a player style. And they don't like that numbers like this reflecting intelligence get out into the public to merit further discussion. There's enough there to discuss and analyze these football prospects for what they are, that this shouldn't be a part of it. And I don't think the NFL likes it one bit at all.
Fair. Hey, very quickly, Shefty, because some of these mock drafts are coming out from people who cover the league, people who are plugged into the league. And what I'm seeing is people just two are dropping down these boards. Again, these are just people's projections. Go ahead. What are you hearing?
I still believe he goes in the top 10. I don't think he makes it out of the top 10. I still think the overwhelming chances are he goes somewhere in the 5 or 6 range. There are the two teams right there, Miami and the Chargers, right? Over the weekend, somebody called me and said, hey, the Dolphins are on Tua and Love for all the talk we've heard about Herbert. And I don't know what's right at this point in time. But I'm telling you right now, it seems like Tua is going to be right in that range, 5, 6, somewhere in that spot. If he slides past there, maybe a team moves up. There are other teams at the back end of the top 10, Jacksonville maybe. So it just depends on what happens here. It's a big week, obviously. I don't see him sliding very far,
okay,
period.
Finally, with all four of us, our faces up on the screen, Adam Schefter, direct question. Who is the greatest basketball player that ever lived?
Very simple. When you watched that series last night, it just was a reminder of how great Michael Jordan is. Just telling you.
So emotional.
Come on.
It's just such emotional. It's just so emotional, man.
This is going to be a tough day for Marcus Swaggoo Spears. Shefty, we'll check in again. Thank you very much. We're having some fun here today. As we continue, J. Will arrived in Chicago a couple of years after Michael left, but the legacy still loomed large. This conversation continues as we get up with you on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Sports will be back.
And our favorite stars will make us cheer again.
But for now, we're all rooting for a different kind of hero.
And doing our part
to make a difference.
Keeping our distance.
And protecting the most vulnerable.
Let's embody the best parts of sports.
Teamwork. Sacrifice.
Resilience. One goal. Together.
We are back on Get Up. Episodes 1 and 2 of the 10-part docuseries The Last Dance debuted last night, taking a look back at that man, Michael Jordan, and his Bulls dynasty, particularly through the lens of the last season that they won, which was the 97-98 season. Jay Williams and Kevin Durant talking about it on the latest edition of The Boardroom.
Well, anything, you know, coach needs you to do it on the floor, anything. You know, you got to be prepared for any situation. And I think MJ was always prepared, no matter if you had to hit the game winning shot, make the game winning, you know, assist, get a steal, get a block shot. I think he was always prepared for every moment. And, you know, that's what when it all cost me is for me. Always focused, always dedicated to your teammates. Like MJ wanted to win and wanted his teammates to shine as well. So you've seen that through watching him. And as I got older and more mature, I started to realize, you know, some of the tactics that he used you know, it was definitely, you know, part of the leadership qualities that he had. It was unique to watch.
You know, Jay Williams is back with me here. And so, Jay, you were old enough during the entirety of Michael Jordan's greatness to have watched it up close. So it makes sense to me that you revere him in the way you do. And, of course, you followed him in Chicago and all the rest of that. But putting that aside for the moment, as you talk to players like Kevin Durant, it fascinates me the way he continues to resonate with guys who were by no means old enough to have seen him at his best. Why do you think that is?
Well, look, I'll tell you one thing about KD, though, Greeny. I remember the first year we shot the boardroom 2 years ago. We were out in L.A., and I went to Kev's place, and I was wondering, okay, what are Kevin Durant and I going to do? What are we going to talk about? We sat there for 2 hours and watched all MJ clips and talked about the nuances of the game. And this dude was able to break down his style of game differently than I've heard anybody break down basketball before. As a player perspective, he talked more like a coach. So it's the way he competed and the angles of attack that made MJ so different. But I will go back to the question I asked Katie about winning at all costs. See, there are different styles. And I've had, you know, when you ask Kevin about this, Kevin can see it from that one vantage point because he is that super, superstar elite player. But also from a guy that used to be that, not that superstar elite player, but the second pick in the draft, as opposed to a guy that went through the G League coming back up to play for the Nets. Winning at all costs, there's a different way that you do that too. Now, Jordan won 6 championships, but I wonder how a lot of other players, because other guys had peers, Jordan didn't really have peers. So those guys like Steve Kerr, those guys like BJ Armstrong, yeah, they won championships, but I wonder what their relationship was like with Michael during those times, because Michael would get on you so differently, it was hard for him to have relationships. And you saw Steve Kerr talk about, hey, look, there were times I didn't even talk to Michael. I didn't know what Michael was thinking about because he was so lost in his craft and how other guys interpreted winning at all costs in their relationship with Michael because of that. That's what makes it interesting, the conversation overall.
I don't want to give anything away that is going to come, but in this coming weekend's episode, specifically episode 4, you see them win their first championship, and you will hear a lot of the players who played with him for years talking about that. When they see the emotion that he has in winning, it takes many of them by surprise for exactly the reason you're talking about, because he did not seem like a person who had any emotions or feelings. I used to say he was more like a shark than a person, because he was so singular in his focus that all he cared about was winning. He would swim and eat, and that's all that sharks do, and that's all that Michael did, was he just wanted to win. Is that uncommon amongst the generation of players today? I think people perceived Kobe Bryant to have a similar mentality, maybe not exactly the same, but similar. Do the players today, do the great ones today, does LeBron James today have that kind of mentality?
No, LeBron James lifts his players in just a completely different way. And it's look, potato, potato, you choose which one that you like. And I'm with Swagoo on this. I'm still standing by my LeBron James comment, because the way he lifts players, it may not be as shark-like and in your face as Michael Jordan. It's just in a different building up type of way that I appreciate differently. So, look, it's Michael Jordan. He's in that conversation. I know you guys say he's the best ever. I hear you. But ultimately, it's the respect that I've heard some of the players talk about what that relationship looks like overall, Greeny. And we value winning championships, but those relationships, to me, I listen to what those teammates had to say. And as a lot of fans are going to find out, it's different.
So I go, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting about this, and Jay is bringing it up here, is the way some leaders lead. And I think we saw some of that with Tom Brady, who was one of the very few athletes ever that you can sort of equate to Michael Jordan. And coincidentally or not, they both won 6 championships. And the way Brady, the way he is with his teammates, how tough he is on his teammates, legendarily tough on them. We saw the frustration boiling over last year with some of the receivers. That felt very similar. How common is that amongst leaders in NFL locker rooms?
It's common, G, but to Jay's point, and let me be 100% honest. Like, I'm the whole leadership thing to me is from a context of how I came up through sports is totally different. Guys lead in different manners. I don't think you have to berate. Some guys berate. Some guys respond to that. I think all of the great coaches, all of the great leaders as players will tell you, they have to know how to approach certain guys that they are trying to get the best out of. And not to take anything away from how MJ did it, how the late great Kobe Bryant did it, or how LeBron or any Tom Brady, any players that we've seen have that level of success that a lot of people don't attain. to Jay's point and what I've tried to tell people when we have this quote unquote argument, my preference is the way LeBron James has done it. That's why, to me, he's the greatest player of all time. I have not seen LeBron James play on any team in his entire career where he didn't lift the players around him, where he didn't make the team better, where other guys didn't benefit from playing with LeBron James as well as Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant.
Jay, well, I'll give you the final word on this. Go.
Look, I MJ, it's going to be fascinating to hear how all these things continue to play out. And I love the way MJ competes. And just to add on to Swaggoo's point, there are different ways to compete and there are different ways to lead. And my preference is LeBron James. But I will say this. Watching that relationship between Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan, I wish that we had more relationships like that in today's game where one player would say, I'm not going anywhere he goes, I'm going. Like, you need that. And we don't see that in today's game as much, i.e., you see it with Belichick and Tom Brady. There you go.
It is certainly a different way that those things came to an end. We have more of this as we continue this morning. Plus, back to the NFL draft. Joe Burrow got some words of advice this weekend, and the Heisman winner paid attention. You'll hear who he talked to and why it was so important. Next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up. The draft is Thursday night, and Wonderlic scores starting to trickle out as we get closer and closer, with Tua Tagovailoa reportedly scoring a 19, which is one below the average of 20. And we say good morning for the first time this week to Laura Rutledge and Mel Kiper Jr., who are with us here in what will be a very busy week for both of you guys. Laura, what context can you provide for us here about Tua's score?
Well, yeah, Greeny, we've reached the pre-draft phase where we're starting to talk about Wonderlic scores. And as Adam Schefter alluded to earlier on your show, many in NFL circles not happy about these getting out, and they never are. As it relates specifically to Tua Tagovailoa, it got out that he had scored a 13. Now, that was the first time that Tua took the Wonderlic test, and it was just an exercise that Alabama did his junior season. They just said, hey, sit down, take this test, no preparation. No even talk about it. Let's just see how you do on it. And he scored a 13. That was reported. Now, the score that the NFL teams have, though, is that 19, which he took again at the combine, and he scored a 19. Once again, you know, no excuses here, but Tua Tagovailoa, not a whole lot of time to prepare for this test because he's been working very hard on getting healthy again. I spoke to one college coach who coached Tua in the past. He said, here's the thing, Tua Tagovailoa, he is football smart, not necessarily a super book smart guy. He said at the NFL level, you're supposed to be football smart. So many NFL teams still very much in on Tua. They're not concerned about this or have not expressed concern, just as they wouldn't express concern for other guys who have scored maybe below average on the Wonderlic test. So it'll be interesting to see, though, how this continues to affect things getting closer to the draft.
So again, 19 is the official score teams have. Mel, how significant is it?
Not significant at all, Green. Look at the great quarterbacks who are right around that number, a little higher, some lower. One of the great young quarterbacks in the NFL, Lamar Jackson. Look at his Wonderlic score. Look at Brett Favre. Look at Patrick Mahomes, who's around a 24. No, Dan Marino, Jim Kelly. You go back to the 80s, 90s, up till now, and that number is right around where a lot of great quarterbacks were. It's higher than some. It's lower, a little lower than some, but it's right in that ballpark, and it doesn't mean anything. When you watch him play quarterback, he sees the field like no other. So to me, the Wonderlic score, look at some of the high Wonderlic scores of the quarterbacks who were complete busts. So, no, I don't think anybody in the NFL, if you like Tua, you still like him. If you didn't and you had questions about durability, this Wonderlic doesn't factor in at all because you already made the decision. You maybe didn't. And the only team that really matters here is two, the Miami Dolphins and the L.A. Chargers. Unless he starts to slip a little bit, then it gets interesting if New England makes a move to try to get him.
Well, that's my next point here. So, Laura, you and I both know that there are a lot of these mock drafts are coming out from people who are plugged into the league, people who talk to people who know these things. And I keep seeing Tua moving down these boards. What are you hearing from the people close to him about his expectation?
Yeah, look, I'm not questioning anybody's reporting. I'm like you, Greeny. I mean, these people are getting information from somewhere. I still expect Tua to be right in that 5 and 6 range when it comes to the picks. Now, we've heard some talk, and this has been bubbling up recently, that the Dolphins are more interested in Justin Herbert. Maybe that is the case. Maybe Tua falls to the 6th pick. From his standpoint, he continues to feel very confident and comfortable with what he's shown these NFL teams, from the pro day video to being able to give out every single piece of medical information that they possibly could provide for these teams. As I've always said, and as I continue to hear, the teams that have been interested in Tua Tagovailoa remain interested and think that they could be getting actually a steal at the 5-6 range of picks, or maybe even a little bit below that, but I still expect it to be in that 5-6 range.
That's the point, Mel, right? Very quickly, because I got to get to the Burrow stuff here, but Mel, sure. Is it still your expectation he's there at 6?
Nobody's told me one way or the other. I got to believe the L.A. Chargers see him sitting there at 6 without having to give up any draft capital. With the L.A. Rams competing and knowing how that fan base will be energized, Greeny, I got to believe if the Chargers passed on him, that would be a shocker to me.
Okay, yeah, so 6 seems to be, I would agree, but we'll wait and see. Now let's get to the one guy we never seem to talk about because he's been number one in this process from the beginning, and that is Joe Burrow, who recently reached out to another former number one overall pick for advice, and that's Peyton Manning. Peyton was on SportsCenter yesterday and shared some of what he told Joe.
I tried to tell him it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Look, I lost more games my rookie year than I had my entire high school and college career combined. I threw 26 interceptions. That's still an NFL record. If Joe wants to break that, I'd be okay with that. We'd still be friends. That's what I tried to encourage Joe and all the NFL quarterbacks, that your rookie year is not going to be the same as your senior year in college, but if you learn how fast these defensive backs are, how soon you have to get rid of the ball, understand defenses, you can become a better player and really get it going the year or two after that.
Yeah, he manages to be sneaky funny while at the same time saying important things. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that number one overall picks have to get used to. Laura, you spent the whole year around him. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, first of all, it's so great that Peyton Manning would spend time giving advice to Joe Burrow. I love it. And I think Burrow will take that advice to heart. Here's the thing about Joe Burrow. He's been through a great deal of adversity when it relates to playing time and things like that throughout his career. He went to Ohio State. He didn't win that job. He had an injury that prevented him from winning the job over Dwayne Haskins and some other frustrations there. Then he goes to LSU, a place that's just been eating quarterbacks alive for a while, wins over the locker room, comes in and has this leadership ability. And Greeny, you guys have been talking about leadership this morning with Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, some of these greats. Here's the thing about Joe Burrow. He's one of those rare leaders that is able to tailor his leadership style to what's necessary for his teammates. And he did that repeatedly over his time as a college player and specifically at LSU en route to an incredible championship run.
All right, Mel, and the first thing I said, Mel, here was we haven't talked about Burrow at all because there really hasn't been much reason to. He's been number one throughout this process. Shefty said put it on the bottom line like months ago here on GetUp. So you and I have talked a million times about your evaluations, and you always say John Elway and Andrew Luck are the gold standard of evaluations for quarterbacks. Where is Burrow in relation to that?
And it's funny, going back to Peyton, he was here. He said, hey, they were telling me I had no upside. I had a low ceiling. So that's how the evaluations go. But in terms of Burrow, it's a one-year grin. I have to contend he had the best 1 year of any quarterback in college football history coming into the NFL draft. He never had a hiccup. He never had a game that made you wonder. His numbers over 71% in every game except the championship game at 63-3 with 5 touchdowns, no picks, was unbelievable. It was a year unlike any other, but it was one great year. It wasn't 2 or 3, and I think that's the only difference with Burrow. But the 1 year was so spectacular, you didn't even care if he didn't have that other year that was comparable to this one.
But if there were no medical questions surrounding Tua, would you still have Burrow the number one quarterback on your board?
Be close. It would be a great discussion. I can't say because I haven't gone there, but yeah, I think if he had zero medical, it would be after Burrow's year. Now, last August, I would have never said this. I would have, but after Burrow's year, it's tough not to take Joe Burrow number one. That year was so, like I say, historically great is all I can say. Nobody has done in 1 year what Joe Burrow accomplished. And the pressure on this kid after winning a Heisman, where, and Laura can speak this, it was national championship or bust for Joe Burrow and LSU. And that enormous pressure and the struggle early against Clemson with that great defensive coordinator and still be able to have five touchdowns and no picks, over 63%, remarkable year for Joe Burrow.
All right, guys, stay close. Go ahead, Laura, quickly, go ahead.
I was just going to say, not to mention the fact that he had to do it in New Orleans and in like the hope of Louisiana was on Joe Burrow's shoulders. So, I mean, you could go on for days about this, but yeah, he's great.
It was the best season any quarterback has had in college by every single standard. Guys, thank you. I want to get Dan and Marcus in here while I have a moment. Marcus, again, you were there up close and personal for all of this stuff. When you hear Peyton Manning talking about what this kid's going to go through, and that's just the reality of it, what'd you take away from it?
I took away from it that he's having a conversation with a kid. Peyton Manning, I'm talking about, is having a conversation with Joe Burrow because he sees what Joe Burrow can potentially be on the next level and telling him not to be discouraged when things go bad. Look, the NFL is a humbling place, and Dan can speak to that from a quarterback standpoint. I can speak to it from being a defensive lineman drafted in the first round with the Dallas Cowboys. There is no room for you to grow up. You better do it now, and you better do it in front of everybody that's expecting you to grow up fast and to have a career, to have some semblance of success. You have to know how to wade through those moments when you're a young player in this league to get yourself to where you believe you can go. So that's what the advice from Peyton Manning I thought was telling Joe Burrow. But gee, I'm telling you right now, if I've looked at this college atmosphere, I've looked at college football from a mental standpoint, I'm not sure, outside of possibly Andrew Luck and a couple other, Christian McCaffrey, I thought of that when he was coming out of Stanford, that I've seen ready to go to the NFL more so than Joe Burrow. Just very few like that.
Dan, you've been watching the tape. You obviously were around the kid as well. What do you think?
And I took three things from kind of the Peyton Manning, Joe Burrow conversation. First of all, I love that Peyton was talking really long-term game with Joe Burrow. Like, he was expressing, listen, I learned so much in my rookie year, and there was blowouts in my rookie year that I played in late that helped me become a better quarterback. That's really good advice for a young player going into the NFL, and what's going to be the number one pick at that position is play the long game. Everything is to build up long-term. Number two, and it was more of an on-the-field thing, and this is something that I have pointed out for Joe Burrow, how quickly he can realize the windows in the NFL are smaller and they close faster. And Peyton talked about how quickly the defensive backs move, and that's really like an on-the-field advice thing for Peyton. And then the third thing would be, and this is the most important one to me, Greeny, that Joe Burrow sought out Peyton Manning's advice. This wasn't a Peyton Manning calling Joe Burrow, and that's really important. I want everyone to kind of mark that for the next decade or 12 years from now, that Joe Burrow sought out Peyton Manning's advice of what to expect being the number one pick and then the rookie quarterback in the NFL. I just think that's very special. I think that's very unique and speaks to his character and what Cincinnati is getting. We talk about greats, and we've spent all morning, to Laura's point, talking about Michael Jordan. It's been the mental that made these guys different. And there's something in Joe Burrow for him to seek out Peyton Manning's advice.
Yeah, sometimes when you're the presumptive number one guy, we've been talking about the draft for weeks. We never mention him because he's not really a part of the discussion. He's the most important player of the night. And live coverage of all 3 days of the draft will start here Thursday night on ESPN and on the NFL Network, with ABC providing coverage of the player's journey to the draft. Our first round coverage begins Thursday, 8 Eastern, with all 3 days also live on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and on the ESPN app. Coming up, what was it like guarding Michael Jordan? Jalen Rose had that experience. He'll tell you exactly what it was like when he joins us live next. Get up on ESPN.